go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, a minute past the hour on this, the 27th day of October, not February, the 27th day of October, 2015. You know, I really do. I beat myself up for stupid little mistakes like that. I don't know where that came from the other night, and I'm still trying to sort it out. Anyway, it's the 27th day of March, no, October, 2015, and this is the horn. And that would be, let's see, 27th day of October 2015. You've got to get the sacred calendar in line with the secular calendar of the Mayans, take into account the zero, the position of Venus. It's Tuesday! Diggity, it is. That means, of course, that it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Oh, and we have some exemplars, brothers and sisters. Oh, we have some exemplars. The horn, of course, is a more than 10-year-old experiment in independent, listener-supported broadcasting. What one millionaire broadcaster once referred to as bake sale radio. But you know what? We're still here. And thank you very kindly to Chris, who took down a big hunk of the remaining hole from last night. Noting that the discussion on language there at the end of the program last night was precisely part and parcel of why she supports the horn, and along the way said, happy 10th anniversary, and here's to another 10. Thank you, Chris. Thank you very kindly. We didn't have Dr. Bill today. He was ready to go, except for the fact that the stream server wasn't, but Ben Birch kindly got that sorted away so we would have a stream to stream on this evening. Thank you, Ben. Thank you very kindly indeed. You know, since 2002, Ben Birch has been running the White Rose Society and has never sent a bill to not nobody. And yet has served out billions of hours of progressive radio. Pretty amazing, isn't it, for, you know, bake sale radio. But, thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. I do appreciate that, Jeremy. Even though we have our fun, this is listener-supported radio. And there are no corporate sponsors. And there are no, green families of Oklahoma. More on them in a minute. Yes, indeed. This is the determination of the people who listen to this program to keep it going. And sometimes we struggle, and sometimes we don't. And we're just trying to get out of October clean. And in order to do that, we need to raise, let's see, $850 for the week. We have bills coming due, past due, and badly need paying. And we'll just have to see how that all plays out. But I'll say now, it would be awfully nice if we could get ahead of the end of the month instead of sort of creeping up on it. Let's see, what would $850 be? I can do some ciphering. That'd be 85 people at $10 a piece. 10 people at $85 a piece. That'd be one at $8.50, two at $4.25, 4 at 212.50. Well, and from there, you know. But anyway, that's what it did. And if you prefer, PayPal is great. That works fine. The interface there, you can ignore the two questions about what it is you do for Milburn Drysdale in the secretarial pool down there at the Commerce Bank of Beverly Hills, and just get to the next screen, and that's where you choose PayPal or credit cards, whatever. Yeah. Or you can use the United States Postal Service, as, for instance, our buddy Tom in California did when he posted his Rounded Up challenge this past Friday. The address, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And with the gentle reminder that should checks and money orders, not cash, because it tends to disappear somewhere between you and us sometimes. And it sucks when that happens. Agent Fred, you know, Mama needs a new pair of shoes, right? But no, we've had empty envelopes arrive in Beckley that Boss Man Wayne's told me about. Make checks and money orders payable to The Horn and not Bob Kincaid, as I never see that stuff, and, well, we got bills to pay. Lots and lots of bills. But, a little bit of good news. There is a gizmo winging its way toward us. Yes. A gadget. A gimcrack. A thingamajig. A what's-its. A who's-its. The first part of the binary system necessary for me to do some fill-in stuff for Mike Malloy. It will be here tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yep. And along the way, I'm proud to say that we have taken care of most of the stuff that had people going, "What's that noise in the background?" Not that y'all talk like that. Only I talk like that. But every computer in here has been replaced. There's a better monitor in place. The mixer is new. We are, in other words, in pretty good shape for going forward into fill-in territory. And I'm very, very, very excited about it. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And, of course, for those of you who don't know, and most of you do, but you never know when the newbies are wandering by. Hi, newbies! Titanic Tuesday is so named for something that happened on local radio over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia. Greater Beckley. As if there was a lesser Beckley. Beckley kind of fulfills that whole lesser Beckley thing all by itself. But anyway... No, there was a radio host over there once upon a time who would read the newspaper to his listeners. I kind of miss him. I do. Because he was fun. He has since been replaced by Andrea Tarantula being piped into the Greater Beckley area. Greater Beckley. I always smirk, chuckle a little bit when I use that phrase. Greater. It goes without saying that there will never be a greatest Beckley. But one of those days when he wasn't reading the newspapers, he answered the phone and said, "Caller, you're on the air," you know, in his monotone. And, "Steve, how come you reckon it is they is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach." To which he replied, absolutely sure of himself, which is what made it so delightful. You know, the deadpan humor is funny. Well, never mind. Let's not go into an examination of humor. "Caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." All right. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic salad tongs. No. So that's where Titanic Tuesday comes from. It is, in fact, a celebration of the attempts at intellect of the right wing in the new United States of America.
The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as a matter of fact, Carol, Beckley does get its stupid piped in now. It's kind of sad to be driving there in Lesser Beckley and hearing Andrea Tarantula hectoring the poor hillbillies, but that's the way they want it over there. It's cheaper that way, you know? But we've got stuff here for Titanic Tuesday. Oh, yes, we do. And I said more on the greens in a minute. Now, this is not prayer meeting Wednesday. It just happens to fall this way. And frankly, this is every bit as deserving of Titanic Tuesday as anything else. So let's not be bigoted against them just because they're a very religious, very grifty, very larcenous kind of family. The Green family. Not green with envy, but green with money. You remember the Green family. They're the ones who have the closely held corporation that believes that the women people with their women parts ought not be that the Hobby Lobby chain run by the Green family ought not be forced to buy their slut medicine that lets them go a slutting around and having sex that the Green family don't approve of, and their slut IUDs, and because they cause silent slut abortions, right? Yeah, they're a great bunch, the Green family. Just ask them, they'll tell you.
But Bob, the Green family closes on Sunday so all their employees can have a day off to go to church.
Aww. Even the ones who desperately need the hours to feed their hungry children. Got to take a day off and go to church, and don't forget to give some of that money we paid you to the gospel sharps now. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that they don't just have a fascination with women's women parts. No. They have a fascination with les artefacts anciens. Yeah, my French sucks. They've got a fascination with ancient artifacts. And it's apparently an extensive collection. Mm-hmm. And the whole purpose of the collection is that they're going to put all their thousands of stuff into this big old building they're building smack dab in the middle of Washington, D.C., and they're going to call it the Museum of the Bible. Yeah, they got all kinds of knickknacks, gimcracks, piece of the true cross, a little piece of the robe. They got the check from the last lunch. Couldn't afford the check from the last supper, but they got the check from the last brunch. That's an old Father Guido Sarducci bit. Mm-hmm. So, in the course of putting together stuff for their little museum of the Bible there, and by little I mean ginormous, they just happened to cross some clay tablets. Clay tablets. Because, I mean, you can't hardly swing a dead cat over there in the Middle East without hitting something that's older than hell. And, of course, they'd be using this in their Bible museum to prove that the world is, you know, just slightly younger than the written recipe for beer. Hell, for all we know, some of them little clay tablets they got have the written recipe for beer, you know, on it. Well, it turns out that the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian Green family, well, it's kind of like what F. Scott Fitzgerald once said to Ernest Hemingway, the rich are different from you and me, and they are, because they can get away with looting the cultural artifacts of a nation. Do you happen to remember, and I know you do, back in those heady days of March 2003 when Donald Rumsfeld said we would be greeted as liberators there in the Iraq, such as? And we were going to be greeted as liberators, and we were all full of ourselves because people were pulling down Saddam statues and stuff. And it turns out that we deployed troops to go and protect the Ministry of Oil while leaving the Ministry of Antiquities and the cultural heritage of the entire world unprotected so that looters could run amok and, you know, turn over shelves and things like that, at which point 5,000-year-old clay tablets would strike the hard cement floors and go, boom, and look, they're dirt again. Unto the dust ye shall return, right? All right. Well, the Green family got them a whole boatload, and by boatload I mean about 200 to 300 little clay tablets with cuneiform writing on it. The very first writing there was. Because I'm not, how old is Linear A over on the island of Crete? Not sure. But, you know, that was a form of writing that developed independently of Egypt or Mesopotamia or anywhere. That's why we still can't read it. But, so, and this means something, because who knows what's on it. But the Green family, in the name of Jesus, too lazy for the reverb on the Jesus there. The Green family just happened upon some cuneiform tablets, between 200 and 300 of them, and who knows what's on them, except for the fact that it was rather fascinating to note, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, that there was an excerpt, a never-before-seen excerpt from the Epic of Gilgamesh came to light, just because there's a bunch of these clay tablets laying around me. Hell, they won't miss 200 or 300 of them, will they? So, who knows what's on these things, but the shipment of 200 to 300 little clay tablets with cuneiform writing all over them was stopped in transit between Israel and Oklahoma City. How about that, Israel? And U.S. Customs agents in Memphis, where FedEx has their headquarters, by the way, stopped this shipment because it looked a little dodgy. Because, see, we do have laws in this country now that say that you can't simply, you know, on the free market, because capitalism, buy up the cultural heritage of another country and stick it away in your Bible museum. Hey, take that and stick it up your Bible museum, right? No, you can't do that anymore. It's against the law. You also are not supposed to be able to do this with ancient indigenous Native American artifacts. Witness the story from a couple of weeks ago about that fine fellow who got busted for looting a probably 10,000-year-old bow, who was known for collecting ancient American artifacts. God, I still think about that one place I saw one time. It was the damnedest thing you ever did see. That was back when I was going to be an archaeologist and so forth. And along the banks of the river there, somebody showed us this little wide spot, bend in the river, where the river had washed away the banks. So it was this silty, kind of sandy, muddy, and there were whole pots that were probably 2,000 years old, clay pots with incision, incised designs on them, just washing out of the sand there. And, of course, people were wandering down and getting them one every now and then because, you know, if you know the right people and you know the people know the right people, the next thing you know, you're into some real money. The area wasn't protected, and it's probably got McMansions on it now with clay pots on the mantelpiece. Yeah, there I am railing against capitalist transactions in ancient cultural heritage. Bob Al Kincaida, why do you hate Merca? But the problem is, back when we invaded the Iraq, such as, we didn't protect the Museum of Antiquities, and so there was a considerable amount of looting that went on. And this was the real kind of looting. Not the one where you take a picture of some white folks standing up to their shoulders in water, carrying a TV over their head, and you put a caption on it that says foraging. No, this was some real live, honest to goodness looting. Because people like to have those little hunks of antiquity. And if you're the Green family with all your millions, you like to have those little hunks of antiquity, 200 and 300 at a time. So, yea, verily, lo and behold, the Green family has about 40,000 or so ancient artifacts from the Middle East, which they were going to put in their Museum of the Bible, which will open in Washington, D.C., to, I'm sure, much fanfare in 2017, and in which any women people who happen to work will not be eligible to have their IUDs paid for thanks to Burwell versus Hobby Lobby and those them unelected black robe judges on the Supreme Court who held for the Greens and against the women who have working reproductive systems. Well, oopsie. The Green family, and we can call this pillaging, maybe the Museum of the Bible, subheading pillaging for Jesus. I forget the Raiders of the Lost Ark theme. Yeah, we do realize that, archaeologically speaking, Indiana Jones wasn't much of an archaeologist. He was a pot hunter. Out there looking for ancient golden statues and idols and whatnot that he could bring back to his university museum there in, what was it, Indiana? I always assumed it was Indiana. So there it is, 2011. And, of course, the Greens are trying to put a brave face on this. they're saying that the paperwork wasn't it. You know, there's a lot of paperwork when you want to bring somebody's cultural heritage into your country and claim it for your own. The paperwork wasn't quite right. This stuff, it'll come to us eventually. It's just been held up in customs. Oops. There is a 4-year-long federal criminal investigation going on around these cuneiform tablets. 4 years? Well, how long has that Kenyan Muslim you slurper been in office now, huh? How long? Yeah, more than 4 years, because I can't count real good. Here's the funny part. You know what the paperwork that wasn't in order was? Now, remember, this is 200 to 300 precious, irreplaceable, cuneiform tablets that represent the dawn of literacy on this here little old planet, this little blue-green time machine hurtling through space. No. The paperwork problem was that these were listed on the forms as clay handicrafts or some such, and listed at a value of about $300. About a dollar a tablet. So what they were seeking was informal entry to the United States, and you've got to have a collective monetary value of less than $2,500. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Isn't this charming? The Daily Beast reports, one source familiar with the Hobby Lobby investigation told us that this is precisely what happened in this case. The tablets were described on their FedEx shipping label as samples of handcrafted clay tiles. Monetary value assigned to them, around $300. So, beyond being, and you know, most of us knew that they were a bunch of grifters in the first place, because there's no way that a biblical, there's no biblical position that can be taken that says, where God says, thou shalt not pay for scientifically developed items to provide contraception to women who have the right to choose what to do with their bodies. We know that can't be, because back then, women did not have the right to themselves at all. They were chattel property in among the peoples of who wrote the Old Testament, where the gods out there giving out the rules and so forth. Women were swapped for cattle and goats and sheep and oxen and he roosters and. Yeah, I got all, okay, and I'll take your daughter for all that. Sounds like a deal to me. Here, let me grab your scrotum and seal the arrangement. They did that, you know. That's why they're such good guides to modern living. The Green family, just in case you're wondering, net worth around $4.5 billion with a B dollars. Devin pointing out, well, hell, them's just rocks with chicken scratch on them. We got slate dumps full of them here in West Virginia. Wolverines! Yeah. So the Greens, eager to put up their stupid Bible museum, which is going to be just chock-a-block full of stupidity. And by the way, I've seen the Daily Beast story has an artist rendering of the Bible Museum as well, and apparently it's a sort of, it's got a kind of an ark look to it. Oh, really? Yeah, granted, no Anopheles mosquitoes going in two by two, the beloved, or the tsetse fly, the beloved of the Creator, as Mark Twain noted. But this family's just another bunch of Christian grifters. And they're willing to steal. Because when you get something like the precious remnant of an ancient culture and you value it at $300 and call them handcrafted clay tiles, your purpose is not really honest. Now, is it? You'd love to see Patriarch Green charged with this, but of course, with $4.5 billion, they'll make sure that somebody downstream takes all the heat for this and goes up, and maybe if he, if that person or that man, that woman, sticks to the Christian version of omerta, then they'll be taken care of when they get out of the federal poke. But kind of like the Don Blankenship trial going on here in West Virginia, it would be sort of nice if they could get enough of these people, people lower down the ladder to drop the dime on the Greens, that we could eventually see Pa Green doing the perp walk. Devin says they were going to destroy the tablets, right? Well, no, they were going to they were going to put them in their Boblin Museum, because we just can't have enough museums in this country to imaginary things. Talk about reading the fine print. These cuneiform tablets are very, very small print. And who knows what they say? And if these grifters for Jesus are given any opportunity to put their little museum together, I'm sure that they'll say, "And lo, the Lord God is God, and the earth was created in 7 days, and you get the idea. It's disgusting." So onward then, because it's Titanic Tuesday, onward to another purveyor of Christian museum, to wit, the Creation Museum down in Kentuckystan, where once upon a time Ken Ham had dreams, I'm telling you, dreams he had of not just a Christian museum, but a Christian museum and roller coasters creation roller coasters. As Devin points out, you know, it'd be funny if one of those clay tablets was actually the John's list for visitors to the sacred temple bordello of Ishtar. There's a guy named... Well, who knew there was a guy named Green that far back? Son of a gun. Hey. Oh, Grandpa, you got a lot of splaining to do. Yeah. But no, once upon a time, Ken Ham was going to have him roller coasters for creation, roller coasters of creation, and a dinosaur log ride, and that thing kind of fell through, I think, last I checked, hopefully. God willing, as the phrase goes. But that doesn't mean he is defeated. Oh, no. He's going on fulfilling his destiny. Mm-hmm. To lead people to his Bronze Age, great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. Well, most people, but not all of them. There's some folks just don't get to go. And you know who that would be, right? That would be your Homer sectionals. Yep. Because, you know, them Homer sectionals, they cause earthquakes and floods and who knows what all. Oh, they do. It's not a joke. And remember, this is Titanic Tuesday, so we're dealing with truly Titanic, as in iceberg dead ahead, full steam ahead, all ahead flank, right? Ken Ham has had a vision from his God. He knows what's going to happen when Tegay start getting married. Did I even issue a hockey puck warning yesterday? On Moran Monday, it's odd for us not to have a hockey puck warning. Well, we've got a hockey puck warning this evening. Oh, yes, we do. Get it now. Go ahead and get you a couple of doubles. Use the Gorilla Tape, like Devin said. Because, by way of prophecy, this I find this left, it's a little bit wanting, because, well, wait a minute, let me look over in the chat room real quick. Yeah, Lottie's in there. Hey, Lottie, how long have the Homer sectionals been getting all Homer sectional married there in Massachusetts? I mean, it's been several years. I mean, it's even been several years that the Homer sectionals have been getting all corn-fed gay married out in Iowegistan. 2004. Thank you, Lottie. Well, that internet latency's not too bad, is it? 2004, they've been getting married in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That's the way you say it down to Alabama, Massachusetts. Even though there's, well, never mind. Hey, Marty says, I thought the hockey puck, or looks like I picked the wrong week to stop drinking warning, was a default. Well, it kind of is, but every now and then, one's going to come up where, even though it's the default setting, you want to make sure that even the people who, the members of the Horn Family Commune congregation, who might have otherwise set theirs aside for supper or something, you just want to keep it in easy reach, the hockey puck. Yeah. So, Ken Ham, who has a diorama in his creation museum that shows Adam and Eve having a nice picnic lunch in the Garden of Eden, having a pastrami on rye with some really good mustard right next to a vegetarian tyrannosaur, which they had done, you know, rode to the picnic. Because that's what it's all about, right? Yeah.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
Yeah, that. You know what I love about that clip? The chickens in the background. The little banjo. The Remington bolt-action rifle. So, yeah, that Ken Ham, he's got a prediction for us. And he went on the Point of View radio show. This was last week. To explain what's going to happen when biblical literalism goes away and everybody can get all gay married up. Hockey puck, hockey puck. Get your hockey puck now. Get a good bite, because there's otherwise the neighbor's gonna think something's wrong with all the screaming going on. Mm-hmm. Are we ready? Yes. Oh, dang it. Don't tell me Ken Ham done complained. He hadn't complained earlier today. Black Stagon, not Paul Frazzalakin. President and CEO of Answers in Genesis. Mm-hmm. Sounds like he's going to be into the sacramental wine.
Oh, this isn't going to be nearly as much fun without the, you know, because Ken Ham has one of those delightful Australian accents, makes it so much more enjoyable. I'll be dipped. Give me a minute. Just where did you go? I hate it when this happens. I built the close of the segment around this. Damn it. Oh, well, so you'll have to put up with my cheesy Australian accent. Sorry. So, anyway, he went on the Point of View radio program. Uh-huh. Where he, explained, oh, I am a clever one. We may have it now. Where he explained what's going, what homosexual marriage, not homosexual marriage means to the United States and to the world, but particularly to the United States. Right, Cuba?
A lot of them are already sort of spiritually gone, even in middle school.
That's correct. In fact, what we did back then, Britt Beamer with America's Research Group did some research for us based on, you know, research that had already been done by Barner and Lifeway, and there are others, that around, you know, two-thirds of young people are leaving the church by the time they reach college age, and very few returning. And so that's the millennials that basically have left the church. And the research...
And in case you're wondering why it is that Ken Ham's on there, apart from the fact that he'll talk to anybody that'll let him spout his craziness, the fact of the matter is... He's got a new book out. He's hustling. Yeah, he's gonna hustle out because you constantly got to be hustling something if you're working there for the Lord. There, talking about your literal 7-day creation that happened, you know, just day before yesterday, you know, on a Thursday. He's got a new book, Ready to Return, Bringing Back the Church's Lost Generation. Yes, he does. Carol Baker, you only thought I was smited and strapped down by the Lord, but you know what? I found a workaround, I did. Waltz and Matilda and all that. Mm-hmm. So the young ones, they done got away from Jesus. Apparently he didn't quite have the gimp mask on him yet. Yeah, probably burn for that one, too. Oh, well. We're having fun, though, aren't we? Yes, we are. So, we've got to understand what it is that's happening to the youth of the church who are going to be forever lost and not capable of understanding that the world is about 6,000 years old and just slightly younger than the written recipe for bread. See, that's why we need the Green family to have those clay tablets. So nobody will know that the bread recipe was written down, you know, before creation. It was probably the Sleestak recipe for bread. No, they didn't evolve into us. The Sleestaks? No, the last known remnant of the Sleestak race exists in the form of Trey Gowdy from South Carolina. It's a very little known real fact.
We did was, why have you left the church? When did this start to happen? What caused you, you know, to reject the Bible, to reject Christianity, and so on? And really what we found out was that they were starting to doubt the Bible at a young age, about 40% by the end of middle school, 45% by the end of high school. And so we realized that these people are starting to doubt God's word right from a very young age. And one of the major...
And you know why that is, Ken Ham? Because it's bullshit. It absolutely is. You can take your average middle schooler, say your average fifth grader, you know, maybe about 11 years old, and you can say, hey, look here, right here in Genesis, it talks about how a man's daughters got him all liquored up and then had sex with him, and that's how an entire people, I think it was the Edomites, came to be about, and that's why it was okay for the children of Israel to commit genocide against them later. And the children go, blimey. No, look here, a little bit further on, see, here, set, no, it says right there, in 2 Kings, about how the value of pi is 3, what, and the kids go, you're nuts, we've already had math, we've already had pi, and we know that pi ain't 3. So Ken Ham is probably right, children do start to reject this foolishness early on. Because it's exactly that, foolishness. You know, the sun standing still in the sky, that kind of crap, which means, of course, that the earth doesn't rotate, revolve around the sun, but the sun revolves around the earth. Rivers of blood, plagues of locusts. I mean, plagues of locusts do happen, but, you know, the Nile River turned to blood. It's right there in Genesis. Ah, blimey. Bagger off, Ken. Please don't hate me for my cheesy Australian accent. I love it. I love it so very much. Not the cheesy part. I love, except when it's being used by Ken Ham or that creep from Hillsong or Tony Abbott or that god-awful, it's a man, baby, that terrible, terrible coal lady down there. No. I mean... I'll watch bad Australian soap operas just or you know Australian rules TV football just to hear the commentary. It's delightful. It's sort of like what a Southern accent could be if the Southern accent didn't have so much, you know, hateful cultural baggage to it. Or maybe it's easier for me to do like my cheesy Australian Southern accent because I'm a hillbilly. I don't know. I mean, we're basically the same people. Right? The folks that Mother England really didn't want around anymore. No. Why don't you go live on a little island somewhere? It'll be lovely. No. Go over to those mountains across the sea. There's some lovely indigenous people there, and perhaps you can take their land from them for them. Yes. Oh, that would be adorable. Yes, quite. Oh, that's true. Marty says I left off the Australian accent as practiced by the evil Rupert Murdoch. Yes, I hate the Australian accent when practiced by Rupert Murdoch, too. Anyway, back to the children in the middle school there.
The reasons that we found out that was happening was because that there are lots of questions leveled really at the Bible being an authority you can trust. And these days, you know, we live in a so-called scientific age, and so people have this idea that science has shown the Bible's an outdated book, a book of mythology. And these young people...
No, Ken Ham, it hasn't proved that it's a book of mythology. It's proved that it's a book of bullshit.
Didn't even have to dodge a lightning bolt. How do you like that? I mean, I think even the big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky looks in it. Nah, it's just having you on a bit. But do continue, Ken Ham.
Bible's true, and where did God come from, and has science really disproved the Bible, and how can we really trust God's word, and why do bad things happen, and how can we explain these sorts of things if there's a loving God? And we found out that a lot of churches, a lot of homes are not really teaching apologetics. They're not teaching a defense of the faith. They're not equipping young people with how to answer the skeptical questions of this age. And because of what they're being taught at public school and other places, it's causing them to doubt the Bible, and that doubt leads to unbelief, and they walk away from the church. And so a lot of churches have actually realized the importance of teaching apologetics, teaching a logical reason defense of the faith to the coming generation so that they will stand firm on the Word of God.
Well, and also, let's, if we can, add something else that you have helped us understand, and that is the way we even teach the Bible when we're in a Sunday school class. Let's talk about those little guys there, maybe in grade school. We talk about Bible stories, and you have admonished us not to use that, because the word stories to a child mean not historical. They're a nice fairy tale story, but they aren't true history.
You're right, Kobe. And, you know, I was just talking at a pastor's conference, actually, here at the Creation Museum right before our interview. And
skip a bit, brother.
Than the Bible, such as the Quran, for instance, they look on as an inspired book. And then you've got 40% of them who would not speak against gay marriage. In fact, 50% of them would not speak against gay marriage. So you have these millennials in our churches that have been very much affected by the world, that have a secular worldview, and they've got a facade of Christianity in a way, because they go to church, they're sitting in a church, attending our churches, but the majority of them do not understand the Christian faith. I mean, for 65% of them to say that if you're a good person, you'll go to heaven, I mean, the Bible makes it clear, unless man is born again, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. So they don't even understand the Christian faith. But many of them don't even understand what salvation is all about. So they don't own their faith. They don't really know what they believe. They don't really understand Christianity as they should. And
well, son of a gun, we've got something in common, because I've said most people who profess Christianity don't. But that's not the point of all of this. No. That's not the point at all. Let's see if we could get up to the Homer sectionals.
Disciples, it means giving answers, 1 Peter 3:15, being able to defend the Christian faith, and Jude, go out and contend for the faith. And we just need to be faithful, because, you know, we could just sit back and do nothing, but that's not what God's Word tells us to do. We need to be on about the business of the King, and the business of the King is reaching lives for the Lord Jesus Christ. So we do that through the Ministry of Answers in Genesis, the Creation Museum, the Life-Size Ark, the materials we produce, like this new book.
Manny, just sort of blithely cruised right past that, the life-sized ark. Well, the Greens may have something to say about that with their little Bible museum up there in Washington, D.C., now, don't you think? Well, apparently, somewhere along the way, I couldn't find the, because remember, I'm having to work from the original source material. Anyhow, along the way there, he does get into marriage, and he says, the doctrine of marriage is based upon the literal history of Genesis, but if that history is not true, if there was no literal Adam and Eve, then what is marriage? Why is it to be a man and a woman? It's only a man and a woman because God invented marriage. And he invented marriage when he made the first marriage, Adam and Eve. I mean, the origin of clothing
is right there in Genesis. If you abandon Genesis' literal history of marriage and say marriage can be two men and two women or whatever you want, well, why not abandon clothing? Why not, indeed? Because a guy who rejects evolution, a guy who rejects the impact of culture upon human development, I mean, for instance, yeah, why then wouldn't your Aleut and your indigenous Alaskans, why wouldn't they be walking around in loincloth and sunglasses? And why then wouldn't your sub-Saharan jungle peoples not be walking around in furs? I mean, why wear clothing? Except for the fact that it has something to do with where it is you are on the planet. The stupid is strong with this one. And then there's that little query coming in from Carol Baker of Far Hooterville. Where did Adam and Eve find the clergyman to perform the wedding ceremony? Oh, see, that's why. That's just because you think it's a story, Carol. God performed the first wedding when he invented it. Now, what I really want to know is when it went from being one man and one woe man, which I think was sort of a default setting because there was only one man and one woe man, and who then did Cain marry? You're my sister, you're my sister. Never mind. But at what point in time did it become okay to marry one man to several woe mans in exchange for some sheep and some goats and some camels and some chickens and some unicorns and basilisks? No pork, right? If you abandon Genesis as history, then why wear clothing? I agree. The only reason Ken Ham knows to, you know, put on a coat in the winter is because God created marriage as a union between one man and one wow man. Otherwise, him being an Australian and all, next thing you know, come February, he's out wandering the streets of that strange little town. In nothing but his Australian Speedo, which may be all right down Australia way, but is frowned upon in the good God standing up, standing Christ-fearing Christian communities of Kentucky. No, Devin, Cain was not a hermaphrodite. Hermaphrodite is Greek, and it hadn't been invented by God yet, Greek. And of course, as Carol notes, show me in the scriptures where it says they got married, Ken Ham. Mm-hmm. Cause you can't, cause it's not there. But I think we are off to a merry start, to say the least. After all, these are celebrations of what passes for intellect in the right wing. That's what Titanic Tuesday is all about. And so here we are at the end of the first hour of the program for this Titanic Tuesday. Again, we are trying to raise $250 this evening, and we are thus far at zero. Hopefully it will not be that way. Trying to raise 250 of 850 that we need to raise on the week. Please? Yeah. It being Tuesday, of course, the 27th day of October, not June 2015. We've got the Green News Report coming up. Mm-hmm. And I just love it when I've been waiting. It's been, you know, there's some songs I don't play until they're bumpers because I don't want to get burned out on them.
And this is one of them. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
We've been driving around from one end of this town to the other and back, but no one's ever seen us.
No one's ever seen us
driving our Econoline
van,
and no one's ever heard of our band. We're the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurban, Apal, and Gilgamesh, and they wouldn't understand the word we say, so we'll scratch it all down into the clay, half believing there will sometime come a day someone gives a damn. Maybe when the concrete has crumbled to the sand, we're the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Ashurban, Apal, and Gilgamesh. The Mesopotamish sun is beating down and making cracks in the ground, but there's nowhere else to stand in Mesopotamia. The kingdom where we secretly reign, the land where we invisibly rule as the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurban, Apal, and Gilgamesh. This is my last stick of gum. I'm gonna cut it up so everybody else gets some, except for Ashurban, Apal, who says my haircut makes me look like a Mohenjo-Daro. Hey, Ashurban, Apal, I'm a Mesopotamian. Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurban, Apal, and
hey, was that a goat? Maybe we can get a woman for it.
It's Tuesday, October 27, 2015.
Are the leaders in your party wrong on the issue?
Well, I believe so.
One Republican senator breaks ranks to support Obama's clean power plan.
This is illegal, even under Indonesian law.
Illegal deforestation causing killer air pollution in Indonesia. Washington, D.C. gets creative with the excrement floating out of the nation's capital.
Oh, man.
Plus, Senator James Inhofe has a plan to derail international climate talks.
Of course he does. All of those plans and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Some warming would actually be good.
Well, thanks for doing your part, Rush Limbaugh. And that's a lot of hot air. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we are now about 1 month away from the international climate talks that will be in Paris. A lot of anticipation for this. Finally, a deal, a treaty for the whole world to combat global warming. And James Inhofe, Senator James Snowball Inhofe, the man who held a snowball on the Senate floor to prove that there was no such thing as global warming, says he is now considering going over to Paris to the talks to be, quote, the bad guy, the one-man truth squad, and tell the truth that they're going to be lied to by the Obama administration.
I think he's going to be viewed more as a one-man comedy team, but
well,
yeah.
Well, this is the guy who said, remember, famously,
the notion that man-made gas has caused global warming is probably the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people.
So he thinks global warming is a hoax. He continues to think it's a hoax. And, well, that's his plan. He's going to try to save the world from President Obama. Whatever happened to the idea that foreign policy stops at the water's edge? These Republicans are now doing this, undermining the president. They did it on Iran. They're trying to do it on global warming.
And it's not just Inhofe. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell from the coal state of Kentucky has warned the international community that Republicans plan to attack and undermine any agreement reached at the UN climate talks.
Unbelievable. That's what these guys do now. Some might call it treason. But anyway, what else do you have for us today that is not treasonous?
Well, I don't know if this is treasonous or not, but McConnell is also pressuring states to defy President Obama's Clean Power Plan. That's the first ever standards to cut carbon emissions from the nation's power plants. However, one Republican senator has broken ranks. Senator Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire came out in support of the Clean Power Plan this week in an interview with New Hampshire's NPR.
I've carefully reviewed this plan. And then I looked at what does New Hampshire have to do to comply, and we are well on our way to meeting the targets. And so that's why I've decided that I will support this plan. I believe we can help address climate change through clean energy solutions that will protect New Hampshire's environment.
Ayotte is facing a tough re-election battle against New Hampshire's Democratic governor, Maggie Hassan, who's already supported the plan.
It's interesting that when these Republicans have actual, you know, competition, suddenly they decide to choose the side of reality, I guess.
President Obama's landmark Clean Power Plan is also now under legal attack. Now, the plan would reduce emissions from the nation's power plants by 30%. It is a major pillar of our emissions deal with China. Literally minutes after the Clean Power Plan was formally published in the Federal Register late last week, 25 states, utilities, and coal industry groups filed court challenges to stop it, alleging the EPA is overstepping its authority. The fight is likely to ultimately land at the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, a public health emergency in Indonesia, where illegal slash-and-burn tactics to clear Indonesia's forests for palm oil plantations has caused out-of-control forest fires, sending choking smoke into neighboring countries. At least 10 people have died, and 500,000 have sought medical treatment. Airlines have canceled flights due to lack of visibility. For the first time, calls are growing for Indonesia's neighbors to step up and prosecute their companies that are illegally clearing Indonesia's land for palm oil plantations, according to Simon Tay of the Singapore Institute for International Affairs on Bloomberg News.
This is illegal even under Indonesian law. So Singapore needs to do its part. If there's a Singapore company that is involved in this, Indonesia should name it. And I would say I would ask our government to prosecute that company this year now.
Finally, the city of Washington, D.C. is getting creative with all of the excrement flowing out of the nation's capital. The city's municipal water system is now utilizing poo power, literally harnessing the electricity from every flush. D.C. Water recently became the first water utility in North America to use a Norwegian technology called thermal hydrolysis. It essentially cooks the sewage and then takes the leftover sludge and converts it into electricity and landscape fertilizer.
Oh, man, if what you're saying is excrement is power, a lot of power in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
I think that's about all I can say on this
radio
broadcast. That's right. For much more on all of our stories today and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Nice bumper, Brad and Desi. 9 minutes past the hour, and you know what? There's more reverence for ancient Mesopotamian culture in that one tune by They Might Be Giants, to wit, the Mesopotamians, than will be in the entirety of that miserable pile of bricks being erected
by the Green family and their $4.5 billion and their insatiable desire to turn this country into a forlorn, miserable, hateful, backward, ignorant theocracy. Or maybe I should say finish transforming this once great nation. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, under God! Might have to start adding that under God part. Thank you, Carol Baker, for getting us started this evening on fundraising, with a note that says, "Come on, guys," in all caps. We have gone from 250 to go to 230 to go. And look, I know it represents a sacrifice. Every penny does. And thank you very kindly for what you do. Thanks to those of you who responded last night to Betsy's challenge for the 10th anniversary. I just want to see us continue. And believe you me, if I ever check my little numbers and find out that we've just hauled in $100 million, the fundraising will be turned off immediately. Hell, checks will probably go out. But until then, since we have spent some time on right-wing idiocy, vis-a-vis things like creation, and I got a note here from Robert in Australia who says, "I like your Australian accent, it's rather good. Although in reality, I shouldn't really hear it, if that makes sense." It does. I figure Australian people probably cringe hearing my Australian accent the way I cringed when I heard Tom Hanks's pitiable attempt at a Southern accent in Gump Force Gump. I cringe thinking about it. Eesh. Robert notes the Australian accent has been changing slowly over the last 50 years, thanks to TV and film and radio, so it varies from place to place across the land. And Robert continues, "I can tell Ken Ham why young people are leaving the church. I was sent to Catholic school for 13 years. By the second year of high school, I'd confirmed it was a lot of bullshit. You can't be taught by insane and violent nuns and brothers for 13 years and not come to that conclusion if you have the slightest amount of intelligence. When I finished high school and started working for a living, I gave up on Christianity. I've been recovering ever since. I don't know what Catholic school is like these days in Australia, as caning and hitting children in New South Wales Catholic schools was banned in 1997, a decade after it was banned in government schools. Better late than never, I suppose, right?" All right. Robert says, "P.S. Sorry about Ham and Murdoch." Yeah, what about Gail What's-Her-Name? That awful coal creep. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And by awful, I mean really, really awful. So I trust you've seen the news that Mumblin' Ben Carson has taken a slim national lead in the bid for the Republican nomination. Donald T. Rump says he doesn't understand why. And he probably doesn't. Understanding things is probably not Donald's, long suit. It's definitely not the deepest puddle on the prairie. No. But since we had Ken Ham, who believes the Earth is, slightly younger than the written recipe for bread, It's probably valuable to run this clip from Mumbling Ben, because this guy wants to be president of the new United States of America. Yeah. Now, this is the same Ben Carson who said that when he was a young man, I guess he's trying to get over the stigma of being perceived as so gosh darned mild-mannered. He said he was very volatile as a teenager. I'd go after people with rocks and bricks, baseball bats, hammers. Yeah. And he said, you know, he said that at one point in time he tried to stab someone. Of course, he went on in his career to stab several people as a man with a knife in his hand. Well paid for the stabbings, of course. Carson, on his mumbling nature, has said, I am soft-spoken. I do have a tendency to be relaxed. I wasn't always like that. There was a time when I was, you know, very volatile, but, you know, I changed. As a teenager, I would go after people with rocks and bricks and baseball bats and hammers. And, of course, many people, why weren't you using a gun, Ben? Don't you love freedom? Why do you hate America, Ben Carson? And, of course, many people know my story. When I was 14, I tried to stab someone. You know, fortunately, my life's been changed. I'm a very different person now. When the news came, when the news broke that Trump had fallen behind Carson, T. Rump said, "We have a breaking story. Donald Trump has fallen to second place behind Ben Carson. We informed Ben, but he was sleeping." Oh, no, I missed that. How did I miss that? Carol asking, did you see Carson's wife singing the national anthem? Holy fur! Get the woman a bucket so she can carry a tune. In response to Robert's remarks on the vicious nuns and brothers, Carol says, you know, the nuns weren't insane. They were sexually frustrated, possibly from being in an abusive relationship with God. Yeah, I'd say. But no, the Mumbling Ben wants to be president, and he wants you to know what kind of president he's going to be, and what kind of thinking is going to drive his presidency.
People believe in God, but I personally believe that this theory that Darwin came up with was something that was encouraged by the adversary, and.
And see, you can't say devil. You can't say that evolution comes from the devil, because if you say devil three times, he with all the sulfur and the brimstone and the pointy tail and the horns and the pitchfork and the cloven hooves, poof, right there in front of you, just like Beetlejuice. So you have to say the adversary. The adversary. That's right. Evolution comes from the devil.
Was something that was encouraged by the adversary. And it has been...
Is there a dog whining in the background of this? Yeah.
Come what is scientifically, politically correct. Amazingly, there are...
Or somebody pinching a child. I don't know.
Adversary. And... It has become what is scientifically, politically correct. Amazingly, there are a significant number of scientists who do not believe it, but they're afraid to say anything.
Yeah, because they're afraid to say anything naturally, because, you know, the evolutionists will come for them, and Obama's Black Lives Matter brown shirts will come for them and take them out in the dark and still of the night and send them away to one of those FEMA re-education camps that's in the basement of an abandoned Walmart somewhere in Texas that even though you didn't know it, but during Operation Jade Helm, they built those FEMA camps, and they're filling them up with people who don't believe in evolution. They're coming for Ben Carson, and he may have to use a hammer on them.
And one of the things that I'm hoping to do over the next few years. One of the books coming up on my docket is called The Organ of Species.
The Organ of Species. Oh, The Organ of Species. Oh, that Ben Carson, he's a clever one. Oh, yes, he's witty. The Organ. And see what he did there? Organ of Species. no, really, Mrs. Carson, stop singing in the background there. The Organ of Species. That's okay. Let him explain. This ought to be good. You didn't put down the hockey puck, did you?
Not the origin of species, the organ of species. And we're going to talk about the organs of the body and how they completely refute evolution and several other things as well.
So, yeah, I'm so going to read that book because I want to hear how wisdom teeth and the appendix refute the idea of evolution. Because really, the appendix kind of proves evolution, doesn't it? Apparently, once upon a time, like before fire or whatever, we as human beings needed a little bit of extra colon just to process all that, you know, meat and what uncooked stuff and, you know, the raw kale and the raw quinoa that we had to grind up just without cooking because no fire. But wait, when we were created, we had fire, didn't we? This is getting so confusing so quickly. I'll be dipped. It will continue, Ben. Please. I mean, it's only a few seconds left.
So that people who are believers will have something they can grasp onto that is done in a way that's not too technical. Because
it can't be too technical. Because the rubes and the mouthwalkers and the knuckle breathers will get lost after the. Here's a question. Here's a question for you, Mumbling Ben or Ken Ham or any of the creationist weirdos out there. It comes in via Twitter at Bob Kincaid from our buddy Isaac. You reckon Ken Ham knows, or I'll just go ahead. I'll just go ahead and include Mumbling Ben Carson in this, too. Reckon any of them knows why their God created man nipples? Because remember, in this sort of patriarchal, man-centric creation story, the guys come first. And ladies, ain't it always the case? But no, but man gets created before woman. So why did, really, nipples, man nipples? Well, see, that was the devil a-working his mischief by sneaking nipples onto man whilst God wasn't looking. The talking snake done slithered down out of the tree over there to Adam, who was napping and hadn't woke up yet, and he just plops them nipples right there on Adam, and Adam wakes up and goes, "What?" And God looks, "Hey, I didn't put those there. Hey, God, what? I got no idea. Maybe I'll be able to use them later." And that's okay. That's what it was, Isaac. God put nipples on men. Kind of the way, there'll be blank spaces in your dashboard on your car for options that you didn't purchase. So men get nipples, but, you know, mammary glands optional. I'm sorry, it's the best I can do. I mean, we're working here with a theory, evolution, that comes from the devil. Carol asking, is there a horn dental plan for my chipped hockey puck teeth? Because, well, I knew that's one of those that'll do it to you. Really? Sweet jumping Jesus on a pogo stick. The devil is behind the theory of evolution. Archbishop Fingerbottom said when Darwin first came out with all of this?
Clearly this is influenced by the devil. Where's that little boy?
Best I can figure. Titanic Tuesdays can be kind of tough. They really, really can be. Oh, I didn't even mention the telephones. The lines are open, of course, if you'd like to join in the conversation. Area code 304-574-8178 or area code 304-663-HORN. Area code 304-663-4676. And thanks for responding to Carol's exhortations. Thank you very kindly to VJ. And to John out on the road. And thanks, Marty. So that takes us down to $175 to go for the evening. Thank you very kindly. Now, Devin, it is not nipply in the chat room. If it is, turn up the heat a little bit. You know, just open the valve there, the evolutionary valve from hell. Oh, a few minutes ago, I mentioned Obama's brown shirts who are going to round up the believers. I don't just say things. No. Let's check in with Michael Savage Wiener, shall we? Poor little fella. They've out-crazied him a long time ago, and he deserves better than he gets, but hardly anybody listens to the Savage Wiener anymore. And he's trying so hard to warn the nation about that one in our White House. Mm-hmm. You know who Obama reminds Savage of? Of course you do.
Has anyone ever said that? Think about what I just said to you. They say that they are not fascists, but they are fascists. But instead of invading other countries, they're invading their own country. Obama is doing the exact same thing. Obama is invading his own country. First with illegal aliens from Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, and China. He's invading his own country. He's making his own people stand down. He's making the local police stand down. He's making the border patrol stand down. So it doesn't matter which way the psychopaths operate, it's still psychopathic behavior. Do you understand what I'm saying to you?
No.
No, I guess not. You didn't read it in the morning newspaper. Along with a picture of some slut from Hollywood slipping on a banana peel on Sunset Boulevard. So I guess it doesn't resonate with you. It's not talking about the founding fathers. I guess so. It's not resonating with you.
You get the idea that, we kind of know where Michael Savage is. Probably the on-air light goes off and the Savage is sitting there.
Yeah, get me more pictures of those sluts slipping on banana peels in Hollywood. You know, that turns me on. It makes my withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave.
Dear God. It doesn't resonate with you. You bunch of heathens. But no, we haven't gotten to the good part. shall we?
Psychopathic behavior, tell me what is. It's all contained in Government Zero. No borders, no language, no culture. The most insightful book of our generation. And I will say so myself, because you're not going to hear about it on Fox News or anywhere else.
Because
now,
we can't afford the advertising.
To my show. If you care to join the program before I get back to all the news of the day, the phone number is...
Yeah, we'll hold on the phone number there. Wouldn't want any members of the Horn Family Commune congregation making crank calls to the Savage Wiener.
2A2. I got an email from someone this morning who's far smarter than I am.
That's a pretty large pool when you get right down to it.
This belief in myself. I work very hard to believe in that. But I know some few people who are smarter than me, particularly one. And he looks ahead. He's more far-seeing than I am. And he said to me, it's over. He said, what Merkel is doing to Germany, what the weakling is doing to England, what the socialist is doing to France, what Obama the psychopath is doing to America, will render this country non-existent in less than 50 years. And I said to him, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. But the fact of the matter is the world is changing in ways you can never imagine. And think more particularly about what I said to you, in case you missed it. Hitler was a psychopath. No one on earth would disagree with that except Nazis who still exist.
731.
What did Hitler do? He invaded other countries to impose his nation's, let us say, distorted values and race upon other countries. That's a given. What is Obama doing? He's invading his own country with people of other races and other cultures and other languages to wipe away the predominant language, the predominant culture of his own nation. He is equally mad to Barack. Obama is as equally as mad as Adolf Hitler in that regard. Write it down. Maybe it'll make it to CNN. Talk.
Write it down. I'm desperate to get on CNN. Nobody takes my calls anymore. Barack Obama, Hitler, 731, Gerald, goddamn it.
Poor Marty. Wiener Bob, really? I don't have any rum here with me. Hey, I'm toughing it out with no tequila, too. So, you know, all we got in common is our misery, Marty. All the least we can do is share it.
He's like Hitler, that Obama. Gonna wipe out the predominant language.
And you know, there's 15 or 20 people that still listen to the Savage Wiener. And it's pitiful, really, the absence of any cultural comprehension, any idea of history whatsoever.
No borders, no politics, no culture.
When in fact the changing dynamic of the population in this country is exactly a function of what humanity has been doing all along. And I guess nobody's ever told the Savage Wiener that there were millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of non-white people in this hemisphere prior to 1492.
Savages is what they was, savages.
And for a guy who's so terrified that brown people are going to bring tuberculosis and your AIDS and your Ebola.
Ebola! Across the porous American borders where you Barack Obama Hitler is just letting them come in because he's trying to destroy America.
For somebody as worried about diseases as the Savage Wiener is, let's see if we can do that with some reverb.
Savage! God damn, I could get a job with doing his voice work. Call me, Michael, call me. Not saying, don't just saying, not saying, just saying.
But for, he's so worried about, does he not know where the diseases came from? The diseases didn't arrive in the New World with dark-skinned people. The diseases arrived in the New World with light-skinned people from Spain and Portugal and England and Holland and France. What kind of I mean, once again, I'll note, this is not the Barack Obama Appreciation Network. We could get going and do an epic filibobster, you, me, us, we, that would go up to, you know, sometime in the wee hours of the morning, just counting off the things with which we disagree with Barack Obama on over trying to figure out a way not to end the sentence with a preposition. But he's not a psychopath. He's not a sociopath. He is a member of the ruling class. I ran across an article earlier today saying, "Now really, how much different is Barack Obama from Willard Romney? How much difference does it make that Obama won?" And I thought, oh, no, not this shit again. Because I can tell you one way that Barack Obama is different from Willard Romney. I get to go to the doctor when I'm sick. I get to actually have a physician manage my, metabolic syndrome, where everything in my guts is at war with me. I've got a doctor who's actually got a file on me. Yeah, okay, well, we might want to, maybe we might have changed the dosage there a little bit. His A1C's not so goddamn bad. I've got a doctor that does that. Because we got Barack Obama instead of Willard Romney. And for the women folk out there with women parts, the fact of the matter is, you're better off having a guy in the White House who will veto the lunacy that comes bubbling up from the fever swamp that is the House and Senate. Oh, and by the way, the person writing that article about, really, how much difference is there between Obama and Romney? That was a progressive person. I mean, not to get all Steelers wheel on anybody, but I'm stuck in the middle with you. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am. You got the Savage Wiener and others out there. You know he's Hitler. And then on our side, you got, there's really no difference between him and Willard Romney. I mean, they're all corporatists. And the whole reason I brought that up is because part of the complaint that, he appointed Wall Street people to his administration. Well, shit the bed. Of course he did. This classless society is as classed up as it can be, short of having barons and dukes and earls and marquises. If you're going to be in the upper echelons of government, you come from a certain caste that does that. It's just a fact. I mean, sure, Mr. Deeds and Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Those are cute fairy tales, but that's all they are. I mean, even the Abraham Lincoln, born in a log cabin, becomes president of the United States. Barack Obama, I was born a poor black child in Kenya, is so much hagiographical crap. Yes, Lincoln was poor. Yes, he had trials and tribulations, but he did work his ass off, and he did put himself in a position to be a rather significantly wealthy railroad company lawyer, and he didn't ride into the White House from some mark of luck or destiny. He moved into the political class. And we have that in this country. So, you know, don't be surprised if, oh, I don't know, let's go all the way on this. Let's elect President Sanders. And if we do, I don't want to hear the crybaby progressives going, well, goddamn, he didn't appoint my credit union local branch manager secretary of the treasury. You shut the f*** up. But, of course, that's exactly what we will hear. Because we on our side are never happy. I don't know who didn't give the article, the author of that article, his fairy dust farting unicorn on inauguration day, but it's apparent that somebody didn't. This is an empire, and empires behave in not empirical like as in evidentiary scientific method, but in empire like fashion. Hi. Hey, let's run over to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Todd?
But, yeah, I just, you know, I feel bad because I couldn't help myself. But, you know, I just want to ask one question and I'll let everybody else talk. But why is Michael Weiner so angry? What is making him that angry against like defenseless people? I mean, when you really just take the emotion out of it and look at what he's talking about, like I've listened to him, I'm like, you're a fucking weird. Sorry, you're a weirdo. What? He's just angry, just like you know, like a rabid dog.
Well, for a long time, I mean, Todd, that shtick worked, but then along came Glenn Beck and Alex Jones, and they stole his shtick. And his stock sank dramatically. At one point, it was really on the rise. Remember, they gave him a. Remember when MSNBC gave him his own show? And he told a gay guy who called into the program to suck a sausage and go get AIDS and die. And that was the end of Michael Savage on TV. It was a shtick, Todd, that worked for a long time. And he's a one-trick pony, and it's all he's got. He's tried to pass himself off as some sort of right wing public intellectual, but it doesn't work. And so, like so many on that side, he's made his bones for the last 7-8 years on nothing but thinly veiled racism.
So the new speaker to be, apparently, I find frightening, and I don't know what. I don't understand how, in the mainstream press, they are saying that this person is a moderate. Now, remember, when he came in, when he got his big name, you know, oh, he's an intelligent political want. You know, we're talking about the steely-eyed lizard person from Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, the zombie-eyed granny starver, as Charlie Pierce calls him.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he already, when he came in, he's handing out books about Ayn Rand. But why are they, that's some bad doo-doo. That's not good. There's nothing positive about that at all.
No, and what you're seeing in Paul Ryan is the rebranding of Paul Ryan. You know, he's trying to, and it's a con, it's a dodge, it's a fraud. But there, you know, that he's going to be somebody with whom compromise can be reached. I mean, didn't you see on the happy news that he's going to be speaker? We've got an agreement out there that says the government won't shut down in December.
Oh, I heard about. Speaking of the speaker, maybe I'm having auditory hallucinations, but I seem to really remember way back the second time Obama got elected, President Obama, whatever, that John Boehner was saying, compromise is not in my vocabulary. I seem like I distinctly remember him saying that, like in every venue, like on 60 Minutes. I don't know, he was on the campaign bus. By the way, he was on the campaign bus when, you understand that election was supposed to be, they were supposed to win the second time. They had rigged the machines in Ohio. You know that, right?
Oh, you mean the Republicans?
Yes. Do you remember when Carl Rove had the breakdown? They knew. See, we got to get away from these electronic voting machines. They spilled the beans. Remember, first of all, at the same time that Boehner was saying, compromise is not my vocabulary because he wanted the Tea Party support. He guaranteed on that bus, they were following, I don't know if it was Steve Kelly or I don't know who was, but it was 60 Minutes. And they were on the bus, and he was like, oh, no, I guarantee you, we're going to have Ohio. And you see in his eyes, said, oh, we got this. I mean, he convinced me. I was like, oh, okay, you know something. Right.
Yeah, which probably proves that get out the vote. I mean, those scams, like Rove ran in Ohio in 2004, those scams only work in elections where there's a hair's breadth of difference. But if you get out the vote so that you'd have to dummy up millions upon millions of votes, it won't work. That's what the Obama campaign did. They got people out to vote, they tended to only care about the presidential election.
And look what the opposition did. They did away. Acorn used to. I remember seeing Acorn people in the neighborhood. And, all Acorn was doing was just trying to get people to sign. People who, they see people like you. In other words, they have people on the street who look like them. It's like, are you registered to vote? You should probably vote. Well, I never thought about it. I mean, I've seen this. That's what happens. It's like, and they just talk to them. It's like, I see you go to the store. Yeah, I went down to Boogie Day. So. And then they get registered to vote, and they vote. But like most, like a certain segment of the population understands, a high voter turnout is not good for the Republicans. They like low voter turnout because then they win.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But... Todd, I'm kind of like you. I don't know. I got a press release in a few minutes ago from Americans for Prosperity, and they're all pissed off that the House of Representatives reached a budget compromise to keep the country afloat past Christmas. Now, granted, we still haven't passed a budget. The House still hasn't done its job. But we're just sort of sticking one Band-Aid on as the old one falls off. But you know what? And Americans for Prosperity is, of course, the teabaggers. You know what the teabaggers are pissed off about, Todd? The Export Import Bank.
Oh,
yeah. Casting a vote in support of this outdated, wasteful, unnecessary, and corrupt bank is a slap in the face to hardworking American families who deserve better than to see their tax dollars handed over to a small group of wealthy corporate. Okay, that has some resonance to it. Maybe so. With today's vote supporting the Ex-Im Bank, members of Congress just made it perfectly clear why their approval rating sits at an abysmal 14%.
Probably it has something to do with they're not getting enough kickback. If something doesn't go right. Because that's what they're all about, is the money. So,
The funny thing is, I can remember when the right wing was screaming for the reauthorization of the Export-Import Bank, because you know what the Export-Import Bank did? It provided millions and millions and millions of dollars for building new coal-fired power plants around the world. And so if I remember correctly, there was, you know, there was pressure put on them to stop doing that. So now that maybe they're not hustling the hydrocarbons quite so hard, the teabaggers don't like them anymore.
But, you know, this is what I don't understand. You got this Freedom Caucus, right? This is like the hardcore. This is like the nerve center of what's left of.
Yeah, right, the nerve center of stupid.
Well, you're being generous. This is what I want to know. This is a question I wish someone could really answer for me. Why, how do they think that? First of all, they're a minority. 40 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of the House of Representatives, right? And you guys are you know, you're a pulse of the people, but you're 40 people out of the whole Congress.
Well, I mean, they're basically the Stupid People Caucus.
Well, how do they, right, why, all right, here's the question. Why do they, first of all, why do they think that they have that much power? What is in their head? Here's a subsection, blah, blah, blah. Now, remember, these are the same people who want to tell women what to do with their vaginas and all that kind of stuff. I mean, not all of that. It's like, man, you're just a pervert. Just, you know, get the hell out. Go away. These are the real hardcore weirdo people, right?
Yeah.
So, and they swear family values, and it's like, well, how come every all this perverted stuff comes out? It's always
right. They swear family values, and then you and then you catch them wearing a gopher suit with a prostitute. Exactly.
So at some point they just need to back up and shut up. But all right.
But why would they? Why would they? They have effective, and it's just the dynamic of one of the dynamics of this form of government. They have effective control of the government. The Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives, Todd, has a chokehold on the rest of us. We are being held. We're being held hostage by the elected representatives of 40 congressional districts in this country. Now,
exactly.
If you were to go and run the numbers and find out. What is the average number of people in any given congressional district? And then you multiply that by 40 and divide it by 2, or multiply it by, instead of divide by 2, multiply by 0.51. What you get is the number of people in this country who are actually running the country, if you're doing it on an electoral basis. If, on the other hand, understanding where the Freedom Caucus's money comes from, it's more like the Freedom Caucus is being run by 4 or 5 billionaire weirdos. You know, the Greens.
Right.
Chuck and Dave
right.
Koch. Sheldon Adelson. Okay? And the thing, why would they stop? They own the country right now. You know, this is a failure of a, this is the abject failure of an attempt, and all the House of Representatives has ever been is an attempt, and all the United States government has ever been is an attempt at very, very thin democracy. If you go back to the Federalist Papers, and, you know, you may have heard Dr. Bill talking about this, and maybe Dr. Bill and I talking about this, Madison says, well, we've got democracy to look at, but we don't want democracy. I mean, we don't want Athenian democracy where the government is being run directly by the citizenry. That we just can't. No, we're going to have a republic like Rome, okay? And then he goes on to say, but in the House of Representatives, we'll let people vote for one or two people and choose between one or two people they want to send to the House of Representatives. And therefore, democracy will be whatever we say democracy is. It's a very, I forget which, Dr. Bill could tell me which Federalist paper that's in, but it's a really, really cynical statement, Todd. We will have democracy.
That is what got me hooked. That's what really got me hooked on listening to Dr. Bill was, I remember that particular, I want to say episode, but that particular lecture, because it was so precarious. It was like, well, that's some crazy shit. What do you mean? And I said, what? You just want people to just fight. That's just ridiculous.
It'll be a democracy because we'll call it democracy.
See,
but in point of fact, you
can't get any more subjective than that.
If you've got 40 people who are able to hold the entire government hostage because they are 40 members of the majority, and those 40 are enough to block legislation or keep anything from progressing through the House, well, you own it. And basically what you've got in the Freedom Caucus is you've got the radical right wing theocratic element of the Republican Party, and not to say that the other members are any better, because it's not like the rest of them are a bunch of people who are just itching to compromise with the Kenyan Muslim usurper. They're not. But you got 40 people who are able, they've carried the Senate theory over. They've watched in the Senate as Mitch McConnell, even when there were 59 Democratic votes, Mitch McConnell was able to impose his will from the minority on the majority and stop everything in its tracks and keep anything from going through. And so somebody wised up and whispered to these, and these are not geniuses, Todd. Oh my God, they're so not geniuses. But the Louis Gohmerts and the Steve Cantaloupe Kings and the Martha Robies and the Trey Gowdies.
Those folks are less than not geniuses.
But the thing is, they've got enough circulating brain power to be able to be taught what it means to be able to control the majority. So now they're kingmaker.
Well, see, and I don't know if it was Dr. Bill that I don't know, because I really don't know. Sometimes I just listen when I'm cleaning or whatnot, when I'm working, I listen. But these folks have been doing research on constitutional convention, and they figured out, see, we have to get back, we figured out if we can get enough states together. See, they started from the ground. They took these state houses. Now, look how many state houses are conservative now. And that's a lot of power. And there's a lot of stuff going on in these state houses. Because that's how Scott Walker, and he was a moron. He's a moron, you know?
Yeah.
He's a henchman.
But you're right. And see, that's the thing for your Chuck and Dave Cokes. It is a lot easier and cheaper to buy a state government than it is to buy a federal one. And so you just pick off one.
And you got a few states, and you need them anyway, because you're capping the industry, you're gonna need something else, you're gonna scratch somebody else's back to get, like, hey, why not? This is a good investment.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And so consequently, that's why all the stuff with regard to women's sovereign control of the workings of their own organs. That's why that's all being assaulted on a state level. Because the billionaire theocrats and plutocrats and oligarchs figured out and apparently passed the information along, or there's some sort of osmosis going on there where a concerted strategy was made to overtake the state governments, because if you control the state governments, you can then control how people vote in the states, and that means you can control who goes to Congress, and that's why the House of Representatives is not going to go back into Democratic hands anytime in the near future. My prediction has been the House does not have a reasonable chance of going back into Democratic hands until the midterm elections of 2022.
Uh-huh. Well, I would like to ask you this. How can they keep controlling this gerrymandering, right? So that is a really a problem also. So how can that be remedied?
Well, you've got a compliant Supreme Court who declared, a year or two ago that the Voting Rights Act was a dead letter? And so that means that the old voter suppression boys, the grandchildren of the old voter suppression boys from the 1950s and 1960s, were back in business. I mean, Jesus God, 10 counties in Alabama. Okay, I mean, granted, Alabama is not California, but you got to have a test case somewhere, and 10 counties in Alabama get the DMV shut down because Alabama's budget's in chaos. I mean, that's the excuse given. And they just happen to be 10 of the blackest counties in Alabama. And so you shut down the DMVs there, and then when people hoot and holler about it, say, all right, we're going to open them up every other Saturday. So you people can go, and because you've got to go to the DMV to get your photo ID in order to be able to cast a vote. And if you've got to drive a 150-mile round trip to get your photo ID, if you don't, that means you don't have a driver's license in the first place, which means you're not likely to go 150 miles round trip to get a photo ID, which just means you don't vote. Ta-da!
There are
various and sundry schemes, not necessarily identical to that, but similar, the whole idea being, let's keep the people who could most likely threaten our hold on power out of the goddamn voting booth.
Well, all I can say is that if we can hire a private jet and get Angry Indian on there, and he can jet to, all these hot spots and get people to vote, and that will be it. I'm telling you, he could handle it.
I don't know if Angry's up to the job.
Oh, okay. Well, it was just an idea. I was just throwing it out there. But
that's a tall order. But realistically, you've got to get people to recognize the nature of the harm, but this is the kind of stuff that requires a response that is on the order of the Freedom Riders of the 1960s. I mean, you gotta get people. But the thing is, they were just trying to register people to vote. It hadn't dawned on those old racists that they could just say, "No, you don't have an ID with a picture on it. You can't vote."
Well,
now in places like Alabama, you can register to vote till hell freezes over. See, but if you can't get that photo ID, you ain't voting.
This is where we lost when it got normalized, where the argument was there was voter fraud. When the voter fraud, let me tell you what voter fraud was when Bush got selected. Right, that's voter fraud.
Okay. Well, no, that's election fraud.
Right. Well,
there's correct. there's never been more than two or three actual cases
of voter fraud. It's about language.
Yeah, correct. But there's never been more than two or three cases of actual voter fraud in the country.
Exactly.
And oddly enough, one of the people perpetrating it was Ann freaking Coulter. Voting in the wrong district.
You have no idea. You have no idea what my id. Oh wow! Good.
But no. I mean, once upon a time,
she's a nasty woman.
Once upon a time, there was voter fraud. Once upon a time, people would be paid for their votes.
Man, that was like in the 1860s, man. They used to, like, serve beer and food, like, hey, you know.
Well, no, I mean, okay, no. No, it goes up into the 20th century where what you'd do is you'd get your gang together and this is all pre-photo ID, so all your men would grow beards and mustaches.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd go and vote in Precinct 1 with a beard and a mustache under one name. And then they'd come out of there, they'd get their pint of liquor, and they'd go and they'd shave off the beard, but they'd leave the mustache. And they'd go to Precinct 2 and vote again, this time as a different dead guy. Get another pint of liquor, come out, or maybe, no, they were cheap. You'd have to wait, you'd have to do it all, then you get your pint of liquor. And then the third time, they'd go and shave off the mustache and be clean-shaven and go to Precinct 3 and vote as another dead guy.
I see. In pieces, right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all kinds of... Look, places like Logan County, West Virginia, when Logan County is down to two people, they will be selling each other their vote every election day. It's a sport. And you know, the corruption is real, but it's a lot harder to do now. But yeah, we've been, and you know, the stories are out there of the dead voting in Cook County, Illinois, that kind of thing.
Well, but I guess from my, you know, people, you know, every, you know, people, and I'm people. And everybody sees things through their lens. And I just know, like, because where I'm living now is not where I spent most of my life. I spent most of my life in the city. And it's amazing. People think in the city you're anonymous, but really it's not. It's a, you're still in a microcosm. And like especially elections, when you go to vote, they know you because they're voting. The polls are so close together, man. They see you going to the supermarket or, you know, the corner store or whatever. So it's not like, you know, they know you. They see you on the street because it's a lot of times.
I've been voting in the same place for 17 years. And I 15 years. And I've never once had anybody ask me for a photo ID. Because it's always the same little old blue-haired ladies at the table. And it's always the same me. And there's a voter's registration roll. I mean, the way it works, at most, if they don't recognize me on site by name, they'll say, let me see your voter ID, not your voter ID, but your voter's registration card. And that's legitimate to me. Because the Secretary of State's office, through the various county clerk's offices, maintains the voter rolls. You have to register to vote. And so they make sure that I correspond to the book, and the book is there to make sure that I haven't voted twice.
Right.
And I sign my name, and I get a little slip of paper and a ballot, and I go do the ballot, and I never use the video game ballot. And then I hand them the paper ballot, and they put the tag on it, and they tear part of the tag off, and they put it down another string, and they put my ballot into the can.
Wow. Wait a minute. You have that option?
That's how I vote.
That's wonderful. That's what we need.
Now, to be fair, I'm marking the ballot, and then they put the ballots through a machine, so it's still susceptible to being monkeyed with. But they are hand countable.
See, that's what I'm... This is what I don't get. You can go and get a pack of gum, and you get a damn receipt. I want a receipt with my vote. If there needs to be a recount, because after Bush got selected, remember, he was selected. How do you stop counting votes? I know it's old.
Well, you have better lawyers. Remember, Gore gave up. Just the same way that in 2004, John Edwards was screaming, "Fight on! Fight on! Make them count every ballot in Ohio! Fight on!" And John Kerry said, "No,
The people have spoken.
And 2 weeks later, he's skiing with a man who called him a girly man in Sun Valley, Idaho. That's why before I took your call. That's why I was talking about there is a political caste in this country.
Yep.
That's part of the reason that Bernie Sanders comes out of Vermont, because Vermont is one of the last places where actual participatory democracy takes place. I mean, you have those town hall meetings in Vermont and New Hampshire, where you show up and everybody votes yay or nay on whether to put a stop sign at the corner of Oak and Main.
Do you know what the average? You know, I'm really dismayed by the average American, because like I say, middle aged, just regular folk who watch like ABC or NBC News at night, you know, and they just take that for what they say, and because. How is it Bernie Sanders is getting, at least in the beginning, and maybe even now, he's getting all these people to his events? It's amazing. It's like, what? And they refuse to report on it, like, in a balanced way, unless you listen to, you know, nonpartisan media. And,
well, I mean,
you know,
it takes
work. Our democracy takes work.
Look, the for-profit media, Todd. You know, come March Madness time, and I love March Madness. I'd like to figure out a way to have about. You know, I especially love the first round when there's like 82 basketball games going on at one time.
And they're knocking them down, man. They're just playing like hell, right?
Yeah, and you know, you need 12 TVs or whatever. Oh, it's just
cool. Yeah. It's like, okay, did you see that? Wow.
And it used to be the same way with New Year's Day and New Year's Day bowl games. I can remember back in the 90s, moving heaven and earth so I could have four televisions going in the living room at the same time, and had this huge New Year's Day party, and we had every network playing a ball game on a different TV, and it was just it was fun, because it wasn't like, you know, you weren't in a bar and nobody was you know, peeing on your shoes or going yeah, you know, no, it was just fun and great food and everything. But anyway, so at March Madness time, the networks love, well, you remember Bill Murray and Caddyshack? There it is, Cinderella story coming out of nowhere. Yeah, they love the Cinderella story in something like March Madness, but not so much in the politics game. They want a nice two horse race narrative, they're, you know, the for profit media are in the tank for Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton on the Democratic side, because she's always going to be good for an ongoing story of some scandal or another that has been largely created and helped along by the for-profit media. Okay? So they like that. So they're not, Jesus God, how many millions of dollars did Time Warner give to Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton's campaign, and you think that they're going to tell a straight story about Bernie?
Oh, that's a done deal.
I mean, do you have any idea how much Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper is worth?
Well, that's what. Oh, by the way, he was also. I'm just going to say this real quick. He was also. I'm telling you, I have evidence of this. He was working for CIA. Paid. Go ahead.
I don't know why. I'd accept the pay, because what I was going to point out on that stage back on October 13th, you had Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper.
Oh man, stop it!
You had Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper. You had Hillary Clinton. You had Bernie Sanders. You had Jim Webb, who can kill you with his thumb, and you had Lincoln Chafee Maryland. Martin O'Malley. Do you know who the... Okay, so that's who was on the stage. Do you know who the richest person on that stage was?
I have no idea.
Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper.
Oh.
Vanderbilt. Not yelling at you, Todd.
Oh, by the way,
Vanderbilt.
You know, I thought he did not have control over that debate. By the way, they kept going over time, and you know, if you're the moderator, you have to take control. You don't. I mean, that's just
no. That was just the carnival aspect. No. That was what makes it a pageant. It wasn't a debate. It was a pageant, and they all are. But he had all the control he wanted because he had the power to look at Bernie Sanders and say, "Of course, Senator Sanders, you took your honeymoon to the Soviet Union, you goddamn commie."
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about this on the program a week or so ago. Some of the slimiest, nastiest red baiting since the McCarthy era. When, you know, there was no truth to that. That was a thing that got started over at Breitbart. But Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper is a multi-millionaire, if not billionaire, because of his family fortune. And so necessarily he's going to get a little red baiting in because he doesn't.
Right.
He didn't want any of it. He's one of those people that Bernie says isn't paying their fair share.
Well, all right, I keep abreast of a lot of documents that come out of Freedom of Information Act when they come out. There's a place I go to where you can read when these things come out. So there's an ongoing operation. It's called is called Mockingbird, and you know, the intelligence operations. They tap people on the shoulder who are in the news industry, right? Presenters and
yeah.
You know, whatever.
Oh, that goes back to Chuck Barris claiming to be a CIA agent.
Yeah, right.
Remember
exactly.
Gong Show?
Way back. Mm-hmm. And so, we have, you know, you look at some of the stuff with the drones are starting.
Yeah.
You know, with the drones are starting.
But I don't need the CIA to see this stuff with a jaundiced eye. All I need to do is understand the way that the corporate oligarchy works.
Well, I think that, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was an original cord cutter, like way back. Like, I cut the cord back in the late 90s, right? When internet started coming in, I said, okay, I think I can finagle, I think I can do this. You know, and get what I need just through the internet without cable. Because when it started going up and up and up, like everybody, you know, like, oh, the cable bill's like $200 a month. It's different if I was broadcasting or something. Of course, you know, it's going to be that. But what I'm saying is that when you watch people watching this regular network news, they're not really getting the news. And it's sad.
All you got to do.
People need information, and people are stupid now. And people get upset with me when I say folks are ignorant, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I know it has negative connotations, but ignorant just means that
uninformed,
you're lazy, or you're stupid. I don't know. But
no, ignorant means you have not been given sufficient information with which to inform and educate yourself. That's why that bumper sticker exists that says you can't fix stupid.
Oh, that's what I would write exactly.
Ignorance is curable. Oh, stupid is terminal. but you say, you know, and that's absolutely true. But try for a minute. I mentioned, you know, Vermont style town level democracy. Try for a minute to imagine that happening in. Oh, South Carolina. Just try that for a minute.
Don't start with me, Bob. I'm telling you.
No, I'm there. But no, I mean, they're in the little town where you live. Imagine that everybody shows up to figure out where to fix a pothole. Well, hell, Well, you know whose potholes are going to get fixed first, don't you? And you know whose potholes are never going to get fixed.
No, we have a whole street where they just stop. They just, it's like, wow, why did the paving, it's like, oh, everything got paved except,
But the larger
they graded it. They just left it. It's like, do you really think it's a good idea? Like, well, they say, we done run out of the black talk.
Sure, but there's something that lurks underneath all of this, and we have to be careful of it here in the Horn Family Commune congregation, and other people who are into politics and into knowing what's going on around them. A whole lot of people, and I think this is by design. A whole lot of people are out there working their asses off every day, Todd. And they are working longer hours than their parents worked and their grandparents worked. And they're working those longer hours for relatively less pay. And everything that they have costs more than it did in their parents' and grandparents' generations. So they are, they are a centimeter. Their nostrils, not their mouths, their nostrils are a centimeter above the water. They're that close to being just sucked under by the economic miracle that is MRCA.
Sounds like a lot of people to me.
And so when you are that close to disaster, how much time do you really have to sit down and contemplate why in the hell it is that we got soldiers dying in Iraq again? How much time do you really, really have to sit down and fully comprehend the nature of the House's Benghazi witch hunt? How much time do you have to sort out, whether Ben Carson knows or doesn't know about actual biological science? I mean, this man said evolution comes from the devil, and he's a goddamn brain surgeon.
But look, I don't know if it was a plan or not, but you know. In my opinion, it was a plan, because if you slowly dumb down people, if you slowly make it hard for folks to understand it and assimilate information, then they're easily manipulated. I used to get paid to monitor news, man. I'm a news junkie, and I always like the news, and I was that's just me. But, I'm just only, that's what I do. I like it. And I have friends, some friends are newsies and some aren't, whatever. But folks have to wake up, man. We have to wake up, because we can do this. We're at a precipice. I'm actually, up until a few months ago, I was very pessimistic. But now I'm optimistic, because I think people are awakening. They're like, oh, hell no. No. Just like today, man, you saw that jackass. I didn't know that guy was a deputy sheriff. That was like 30 miles from here. Where he gripped up that girl in school. That's all on the national news. You see what I'm saying? What the hell was he thinking? You're inside of school. Where do you think that girl is gonna go? I don't care what she did to you. It doesn't matter, man. You gotta, use your head.
Well, I mean, there's several different ways to come at that story. One, no big burly man has any business laying hands on a girl or young woman inside of school. I would say, outside in the big bad world, different story maybe if she's shooting or killing somebody but she wasn't doing any of that. The origins of this problem lie in the fact that all over America now, we have what are called resource officers who are actually, armed cops inside schools. I mean, I'm 52 years old, be 53 in a couple of months. We didn't have those when I was going to school. They were not necessary. And understand, I'm not talking about me going to school in some lily white educational system. We were, from first grade forward, we were fully integrated, and we did not have cops on site.
Now, all right. to me, it just the mere presence of people like that. You know, when we grew up, that would have been. It's like almost you want to evoke a certain type of behavior in people. You know, what? So it's like they say it's a school to prison type of thing. You know, I'm almost speechless because I really blacked out when I first saw that last night. I was at a friend's house, and I just dropped by. I was walking my dog, and I saw the cards. I was like, "Hey, what up?" Blah blah blah. So, you know, I went in, and it was on the news. Like, you didn't see that? I was like, "Nah," and I was like, "What?" And I said, "No, that can't be." And you know, I was just shocked. Because that's the first thing I thought. Like you said, like when you're on the street, that's one thing. Now, but where do you think that girl is going to go? You're inside of a school. You have control. At the end of the day, you still have control. Call a female officer in. Get in her face. Stand right up on her. That's okay. That's fine. Get in her personal space. That's okay. If she hits you, oh. Tell her, well, you know, you'll be charged with that. No.
And look, I mean, there's other ways to look at this. It's South Carolina, Todd. I'm glad he didn't. I am mercifully thankful, not glad. I am grateful that he didn't pull out a gun and splatter her brains all across the blackboard for it.
Oh. That, you know what, that's what I was searching for. I had, you know what.
It's South Carolina. I am glad he didn't take out his pepper spray and blind her. I'm glad he didn't take out his taser and electrocute her until she urinated all over herself.
Let me tell you something. If you want a gun, you come here, man. I had never, listen, this place is just awash in weapons. These MFs, man. Look. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not guilty, but I'm just saying that these people have fetish eyes with the weapons. I mean, there's like, how many guns do you fucking need? I'm like, what?
Well, wasn't the guy who got popped for having 7,000 guns, wasn't he in South Carolina?
7,000! Pageland. Yeah, I know where that is. I got a buddy that lives up there, man. That's like tobacco country, like, ain't nothing going on. Man, that place, that's crack city up. You know, these people still smoke crack around here. This place is cracked the fuck out. What is wrong with these people?
I didn't know it ever.
What is wrong with these people?
I didn't know it. Honest to God, I didn't know it ever went away. I mean, you know.
Shit is played out, man. Oh, man. That crack shit is played out. That shit played out like fucking 10, 15 years ago. I mean, anybody who had any sense. Man, you got a permanent underclass of people that I guess they, well, now it's see, you get me started on this stuff, but wait, I want to go back.
Well, and I do too, because, you know, the question is, why do we need cops in schools? A lot of this cop business goes back to the mid 90s and it goes back to Bill Clinton. Remember when we had community policing block grants? You remember those?
Yeah,
that's another way of saying, cop welfare. Okay, that was money, because for a small town like the one I live near, to maintain the police officers are the single most expensive thing in my small town's budget.
Subsidized housing.
No. I mean, no, police are expensive.
No, what I'm saying is that they don't get, I thought what you were getting at is like they get.
No. It's you have to pay their salary. You have to pay their training. You have to pay their insurance.
Yeah, but they have
you have to pay their
neighbor,
fuel on their gas guzzler car. No, the cop is the having two or three cops on our force down here is the most expensive part of the budget. And so, you know, you had community block grants for community policing, and basically it was federal money that rolled downhill to give cops jobs. All right? And it was all part of the Omnibus Crime Bill, which was the beginning of the prison industrial complex.
Wait, the Omnibus?
Yeah, the Omnibus Crime Bill of 1996. And then, you know, along about the same time, Columbine comes along. And the next thing you know, we've got to have cops in schools so that they can fight back against the what turns out to be hooligan white terrorists. But in time, the cops on campus wind up being used primarily against communities of color.
Well,
there was a better way, regardless of what the circumstances were. I've read one story where the girl's offense was that she, and I don't use that racially derogatorily, I mean she's a girl, not a woman, where her offense was chewing gum in class.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about what happened yesterday?
Yeah.
See, I'm not. I'm like I said. I don't have cable. I don't have like. I could pull up the TV station on the internet. But I just haven't taken the time. That's how this started. Are you?
Well, no. I mean, there are different accounts. But what I'm getting at is whatever the account. It was handled wrong. For instance, if you're going to have school resource officers in schools where there are both males and females, you need a guy cop and you need a woman cop.
Absolutely. See, that's the thing. You don't know a lot of these kids, man. Some of them have been abused and stuff, and you'd be surprised. You just can't just touch these kids. Kids now are different. Kids now are different. You just can't do that. You have to really, they do not like being confronted like that. You have to have a relationship with them. You can't get up in their face like that.
Well, but what I'm asking, what changed? I mean, I've got a snarky comment from Carol over here. She says, Hooterville is cracked the fuck out too. And she says, we need cops in schools because we kicked Jesus out.
See, in Philly, man, crack has played out when the good herb came back. You know, honestly, they just pull all the weed, came off the street. That's when everybody got cracked that way back in the day. But now the herb is back. That started way back, like 10 years ago. But, civilized places, it seems like these rural places in the city, now the new thing, that's another thing I'll talk about, though. It's now these heroin addicts. But go ahead, please.
No, the video is disgusting. But, And I would really
made me black out. I don't black out, right? I was like, what? I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, what? Then they started again. I was like, what? Oh shit!
And I don't.
That cop is lucky nobody shot his ass. You understand?
Well, and understand. And, you know,
that motherfucker's going to die.
But guess what, Todd? He's double dipping. He's not just the school's resource officer. He's the defensive line coach for the football team.
Oh, that's so messy. Mm. Oh boy.
And I don't know. Maybe he was all roided up.
That's what exactly. See, there's so much we have to talk about. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I'm telling you, I'm in gun culture here now. I can see this shit, and I understand it. You know, this is a big country. I do understand gun rights now. Like, when I was in the city, I was like, what the fuck you need a gun for? But now, out here, you need a gun in your house. But, I mean, not to ride around with it and shit. That's stupid. Unless you're riding around at night and you break down, but that's different. But what I'm saying is that, these guys are roided up and they like lift weight and you can tell. I mean, it's obvious, man. They get this funny shit on their face. And that's the thing they do in the gym. And the other thing is that if they go to these indoor ranges, this is really important, these indoor firing ranges, and they like guns a lot, it's all-weather indoor ranges, you're breathing in that lead vapor. When you fire that weapon, you get that thing heated up. It's fun, but I don't do that shit inside ever. ever anymore after learning about this. And because it smells good. It's like, you know how gasoline smells? It's like, oh, I shouldn't smell it, but it smells good. You know?
Yeah,
like,
I do, yeah.
You know, right, exactly. That, you know,
yeah, that kind of nifty cordite smell, is that what you're talking about?
Yep.
Mm.
But and, you know, the lead, and see, lead does not go out of your body. It's a cumulative thing. It's really fucking dangerous. And that's, you know what, and, oh, my God, I have to say this right now. We have fucked up. I mean, between Fukushima and what we have done to Iraq in terms of depleted uranium weapons and just regular lead, just regular weapons. Think how much lead is in that. That shit is fucked up. You, what? We're all gonna be mutants, man. That's some fucked up shit. Just think about it. Think about it.
Sure. And we've been, you know, every generation has breathed a ton of mercury thanks to coal-fired power plants. Sure. We've got more mercury in our system. I mean, if you could do the comparison, there's more mercury in us than there was in the framers of the Constitution.
So what should we do?
And you know, mercury will make you crazy. But, I mean, you know, more than a dozen students at that high school have said that they are scared to death of the school resource officer. Okay? I don't know what... The question is, what makes... And we don't have it, at least I don't have it right in front of me. Why is it that the teacher called the school resource officer, you know, the school cop, why did the teacher call the resource officer into the classroom on that young woman? What?
Well, that's a good question.
And I'm not trying to be an asshole about this. And this isn't like saying what was she wearing. I'm not asking that question. I'm making the same kind of inquiry that will be made in the investigation into the whole event.
No, that, you know what's interesting about your question is that we have video from a number of sources now. Now, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I heard about it. You know, this you keep leaking out.
Oh no! One of the kids got arrested. One of the kids got arrested and held on $1,000 bail for taking video of this guy doing this.
Now, see, that's what the fuck. Do you know how much trouble? Listen, this place is like I keep telling you. I don't even go out of Harley at night. I used to like to go out. I used to like to go out. People have to come here. You know, they got to come see me because I don't feel safe out here. I just don't want to put myself in that position, man. This is the dirty
South,
man.
So here's what I want to know. I want to know this as someone who is trying to dispassionately understand the situation. I'm predisposed to look at that video and think that that was horrible, because on the video it is horrible. Okay, because the young woman, the girl, is sitting there in her chair and then nothing. I mean, she doesn't swing at him. She doesn't try to, you know, burn him with a cigarette or spray perfume
right
in his eyes or spit in his face.
Exactly.
And then wow.
I'm sorry.
I want to know.
That's what I'm trying to get at. There's video of everything else. So what, in other words, what could have happened between the teacher and the student that precipitated the teacher to call the resource officer? Because it seemed like there was no physical problem until the resource officer entered the room.
Right, and Jack in Shreveport tells me the assistant principal was called first. Okay, so teacher calls assistant principal calls the school cop. Why? Okay, why? What? What? Because you can't just call the assistant principal for doing nothing. You can't. There has to be some infraction.
I can say this from being a teacher. I've been in the classroom, and the girl had. I'm telling you, I was working. It wasn't inner city. These kids were like sons and daughters of municipal workers, cops, firemen. Regular folk. So when they, especially teenage girls, man, they're very mercurial. And when they get pissed off, sometimes they just put their head down on the desk. And then you just leave them alone. Leave them alone. Sometimes it's better just leave them alone. And you know what? And they still hear everything. Kids are smart now. They're smarter than we were when we grew up. They're still hearing everything that's going on. Just leave them alone. And they'll work through it. The bell rings or whatever. And they go to the next class. Now, unless something surfaces that shows there was some type of altercation in that classroom that we have not seen, you see where I'm going?
Yeah, I do. And Jack said, while watching the video, I saw something that seemed very strange. The kid in the foreground on the right of the screen is looking straight ahead while the officer takes down the girl. You have to work at not looking at the girl and the cop. A news host noticed the same, and that all the students were doing that. Either the host or guests.
They were scared of him.
Either the host or guests suggested the kids look away because they were scared of being disciplined themselves.
Yep. That's what I'm saying. He's a bad actor. They're like that, man. I'm telling you. See, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not trying to bring any racial stuff in here. I don't care who's listening.
Okay, so iPi in the chat room says, I thought I read it was the kid using a cell phone and not answering to the teacher. And in the chat room, Kathy said it doesn't matter. I would stop the class and let everyone listen to her.
Exactly. You have to use your head. Exactly. Exactly. See, you can shame kids. There's a way. And shame is, that's pretty harsh, actually. Shame is worse than physical stuff. See? Because especially with girls. Girls, man, teenage girls, man, they're trouble. They are trouble. They are mean. They are so mean to each other. They are so mean to each other.
Stand by a second. Hey, Todd, stand by a second. Yeah. I got Carol on here who may have a few more details for us.
Bob?
Yes?
I watched that video
about
25 times, and a couple of things happened here. All of the witnesses claim that the teacher gave her an order, she ignored him, didn't talk back, didn't anything, just didn't respond. So he told her to go report to the resource officer. She didn't get up, she didn't backtalk, she didn't respond. The assistant principal came down and tried to talk to her. She didn't backtalk, she didn't move, she didn't respond.
Mm-hmm.
Then the resource officer came in and immediately was belligerent. Because apparently she interrupted, I don't know, his steroid injection, I don't know. But she just did not respond to him. And the next thing you know, he's got her and is slamming her with her desk still attached to her. And once he got her extricated from that, he threw her across the room and slammed her into a wall. Now, the kid who videotaped it wasn't interfering with the officer, wasn't anything. I mean, he wasn't mouthing off.
He was just arrested for videoing the altercation.
Absolutely, because the cop knew, and all the police knew how bad it was going to look.
Yep.
And
see,
it was a pure case. It looked like that cop was it was roid rage. And I see it a lot.
Well, I mean, obviously we see it from a lot of cops all over the country.
We do. There's videos get posted up on the internet every single day. One of my favorite websites is called Filming Cops, because that's where everybody pours all of their cop abuse videos. And it kind of, you know, it kind of, I'm beginning to believe that the good cop is a myth. Because who's stopping them? How many adults were in that room who attempted to say, okay,
what are you doing?
Out of control? Because nobody can do that with a cop. He walked in, barked orders at her, and because he didn't get instantaneous compliance, he shot it from 0 to 100. And the fact is, who are the adults in the room?
Well, amen.
In my day, Bob, a cop would have walked up to you and said, "Honey, look, I don't know what's wrong. And I can't fix it if I can't talk to you. And I don't want to cause a scene, and I'm not here to embarrass you. Let's just step out in the hall and talk for a couple of minutes." Where was that?
Well, this is not defend a cop. And there's what happened on that video is absolutely indefensible. But what I really want to know, because, you know, the teacher calls the vice principal nothing with the vice principal, and then calls the cop.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have it right?
Yep.
And I'm sure there are right-wing hissies being had all over the place. And has the word thug been thrown around yet? I mean, she's
none of this would have happened if she would have just followed orders. She deserved everything she got. When an officer walks in and tells you to do something, you do it, by God, or you deserve everything you get.
I mean, the male teacher is not going to set hands upon the girl because it'll be his job.
Yep.
The assistant principal probably feels the same way.
Yep.
And if she's sitting... So, I mean, I understand passive resistance.
I do, too.
I really understand it. I mean, that's where you sit there and you know that you're going to take a beating, and you're okay with the beating you're going to take because you're standing up for or sitting down for some express purpose. We remember the cop at, what, UC Davis, who just unloaded a can of pepper spray onto somebody who was just sitting there.
On the ground, tied up.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
Okay.
And now he's suing for all the mental distress that he got because we made a meme out of him.
Right. And so what I'm trying... And I'm not an educator. And I think there's a good reason I'm not a teacher. How do you resolve... And maybe we need somebody who's a specialist in conflict resolution. How do you resolve this?
Well, I think that you resolve it, Bob, not by escalating it, but by if somebody's upset. I was always taught that if they're talking in a certain level, you go down a level. If somebody is so upset, then you can't match their energy level or go above it. You have to go below it.
Right. The response to someone who's screaming is not to scream louder.
Exactly. You talk because it forces them to quiet down to hear you. Because they really are probably interested in what you're going to say. They may say otherwise. But I worked with kids. I mean, that's what we used to do. It's what we were taught.
Does the proliferation of personal communication devices make any difference in this situation?
Only in the fact that it allowed us to see what really happened, at least to view what happened while we might not have seen or heard everything that led up to it.
Because again, I'm contemplating my own geezerhood. I guess I lost Todd.
Oh, no. Todd! We lost Todd! Son of a bitch! They killed
back.
Todd!
Yeah. But, you know, in my day, we didn't take our telephones to class.
Right, because they were connected in the kitchen at your house.
Right, right. But what do you do if you're a teacher and you're sitting there and you're trying to do the lesson and you got some kids paying attention who are trying to learn and get an education, and you got two kids, one in either corner of the room, who are sitting there texting back and forth to each other. I can't believe what a dickhead this guy is. Yeah, he's such a dickhead, LOL.
Yeah, well, I know a teacher at our local school, and she has a basket, and she's holding it. And all of the kids have to put their communication devices in the basket before they sit down. And mm-hmm. they know that if they're caught with it, then they have to share the texts with the whole class. And you only have to get embarrassed once before you figure out that it's probably not a good idea.
You are so cute!
That's right. Or the teacher is such a, you know. Well, you know what? When they get caught saying that out loud and they're getting the look, but, you know. Like I
don't think this did not have to go down the way it went down.
No.
And the question you ask is, does this go down differently with a little white girl?
Of course. That's a fair question. It is a fair question. Because we've seen it time and time again. If that little girl looked like a cheerleader, do you really believe that cop would have done that?
Well, okay, and let's bring economics into it. If that girl's daddy is the mayor,
mm-hmm.
or the chief of police's daughter, does he do that?
Oh, now you're just funning me.
The demographics on that school, what it's about 60% black, 30% white.
Mm-hmm.
The area it's northeast of Columbia, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. I don't understand it to be a poor school.
Bob, there was no way to contextualize the brutality.
Well, and I guess that's what I'm trying to do.
You can't square that circle, buddy. Didn't compute a grown armed man against a sullen teenage girl. Like, we've never had to deal with sullen teenage girls before. And we don't know what her.
Oh, my God, my life is over.
But, Bob, let's face it. We don't know what's going on in her life. We don't. We don't know what caused her.
No, we don't. We know that all kinds of kids were scared to death of that guy.
Yeah, I would have been.
You know, it makes you wonder about the boys on the football team.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, he's, what, the defensive line coach?
Yep.
And the word coming out of the school board is that he will have no contact with any children in any schools. As the investigation proceeds, I'd say he's pretty well done being a school resource officer as it is.
I'm not so sure because I'm not used to seeing police officers get punished. You know, I sent you a link a little while ago. Did you have a chance to sneak a peek at that?
No, I did not.
Well, there was a cop who was awarded the Police Officer of the Year
award. Oh, yeah. I saw that, yeah.
Who molested a 4-year-old girl. He was facing 30 years in prison, but the court decided that his humiliation was really enough. So,
he had, and again, let's repeat that. Aaron Michael Fisher of Jefferson City, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
Walked on a charge of raping a 4-year-old girl.
Repeatedly.
I'm sorry, 5-month-old daughter. Not 4-year-old, 5-month-old.
Oh.
He was charged in, oh, 2010, or mm-hmm. That's when they started making a charge. The case was ready to go to trial in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
The lawyer for Fisher moved for a continuance of the trial, and then filed a motion saying, I was denied a speedy trial, a constitutional claim. And the court said, damn straight, you were.
That's right.
But you know what? This guy needs to be in prison for the rest of his natural born days.
Oh, but the police unions are packing the courtroom and giving testimonial after testimonial after testimonial for these people about what an exemplary career they had before they did this and how prison isn't safe for them. So, you know, haven't they been punished enough? No!
Well, the prosecutor was disgusted. And he said, you know, the case law is absolutely clear in Missouri that the defendant is not allowed to profit by his own gamesmanship. Yeah. So if anybody's in the tank here, it's the judge.
That's right.
And that would be Cole County Circuit Judge Patricia Joyce. And I mean, it's settled law in this state, for instance, that if you're going to make a speedy trial claim, one, you have to assert it.
Yes.
And then you can't turn around and move to, and if you move to continue it after you've made your speedy trial claim, you kind of waive that speedy trial right.
Uh-huh.
So, this is astonishing.
Well, we have a justice system for poor people, and we have a justice system for rich people. Then we have a justice system for police officers.
And the guy, well.
Where they get to investigate themselves, clear themselves of wrongdoing 99% of the time, unless what they did was so egregious that it's just beyond the pale.
Well, I mean, this thing is a procedural mess.
Oh yeah,
because both the circuit judges in Cole and Miller counties wound up recusing themselves, probably because of Cobb, and that's the right thing to do.
Yes.
So then this Patricia Joyce gets appointed to the case in January of this year. His trial was scheduled to begin next month, and then Fisher and his attorneys filed a motion saying that the state had waited too long, and Patricia Joyce said, damn straight, I want out of this.
Mm-hmm. Charming, isn't it?
The prosecutor said, I think the procedural facts in this case are abundantly clear that all this delay was instigated at the behest of this defendant, and one thing that's really always been clear, the case law is absolutely clear that the defendant is not allowed to profit by his own gamesmanship. So the question is, out in Missouri, and I don't know the answer to this, does the prosecution have any kind of right of appeal on this?
Unlikely. They probably don't want to cross that judge because of how many times they have to appear in that judge's courtroom.
No, because she's a judge from somewhere else.
Oh, a rented judge.
A judge from another jurisdiction, because the local judges conflicted themselves out for the right reason.
I don't know. I don't know then. I don't know.
I can't imagine any circuit judge in this state going, oh yeah, sure, go and sin no more.
Yeah.
This doesn't fall on the prosecution.
Mm-mm.
This doesn't fall on the people of the county.
No.
This falls on that judge who was appointed in. So, you know, you want to do a little research. Let's find out about Circuit Judge Patricia Joyce, where she comes from, and who she's connected to.
I'm all over it.
Oh, and hell, we got to get out of here, Carol.
We do. Sorry, I didn't mean to bump you, Todd. Love you.
Thank you very kindly, Todd, and thank you, Carol. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Oh, and thanks for getting us started this evening. And I have later found out that the website is down, which sucketh mightily, and I guess that's my project for here as soon as the program's over. Yay! But thanks for helping how you could, and I'm sorry if the portal wasn't there. If you do want to contribute, you can always just go to your own PayPal and then use send money, and then you can do a credit card option. You don't even necessarily have to have a PayPal account, but just use bobkincaid@gmail.com. Because, well, we're digging ourselves. I'm getting in a hole. But thank you for trying. And thank you for letting me know the website's down. That sucketh. Thanks, everybody. Got to get out of here in a hurry. Hey, my voice up in a couple of minutes. Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.